Good morning and welcome to Wavemakers, a weekly conversation with people making a difference in the Tampa Bay region. I'm your host, Janet Scherberger.
And I'm Tom Scherberger.
And answering the phones for us today is the irascible John Dunn. So if you want to try running the John Dunn gauntlet, give us a call at 813-239-9663, or you can email us at dj@wmnf.org. You can also send us a text message to 813-433-0885. Today's Wavemaker is Yvette Lewis, president of the Hillsborough County NAACP. Welcome, Yvette.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being here. Yvette has been president of the NAACP since 2017, and before that, she was a member of the group's political action committee for 7 years. She's been in the public eye on everything from wage inequity to affordable housing, police relations, and abandoned black cemeteries. No matter what issue she's weighing in on, she's doing it in a straightforward, no holds barred way. Here's what she had to say about a controversial program in which Tampa police notified landlords when tenants were arrested, often leading to evictions, even without convictions, and putting entire families out on the street. Let's see. We're trying to get Yvette on here.
Until we are assured that the people's rights are not being violated.
I'm going to start over.
I am asking that you stop this program until we are assured that the people's rights are not being violated. Again, the NAACP wants safe communities. This is another biking while black. But let's call it something different. An ace is an ace, and a spade is a spade. We're renting while black in the city of Tampa. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Yvette speaking to the Tampa City Council in September. She was a part of a number of people that were opposed to that program. And 3 months later, the so-called crime-free housing program was eliminated. Yvette, was that mission accomplished with that program?
Yes, it was mission accomplished, but we're not quite finished with it yet because we have still some families that had experienced a great deal of hardship. So we are still looking out for those families as well.
The program is not completely gone. It's still now a just safety, crime safety sort of thing, and it's less about monitoring tenants and alerting landlords if they've been arrested.
Yeah, that's how they worded it to make it look in their favor. So, but that's fine. So, but we were successful on advocating for the community and making sure that no one's civil rights were violated.
And WMNF listeners, if you want to call in and ask a question of Yvette Lewis, the number is 813-239-9663. You can also send us an email to dj@wmnf.org. And you've been around for a long time. You're in the public eye. You're a very public person. And on Wavemakers, we like to go into a little bit of the background of the movers and shakers in the Tampa Bay region and find out how they got to where they are now. And you, born and raised in East Tampa. You grew up in East Tampa?
Yes, ma'am. Grew up in an area they call Jackson Heights and off the corner of 34th and Osborne.
And you still live in East Tampa?
I still live there.
And where did you go to school? You went to elementary, middle, and
so at that time they started busing. So they bused us to Lutz. So we went to Lutz Elementary School. So they bused us way out there.
What year was that?
If I tell you.
They were starting busing.
Yeah,
they bused you to Lutz.
Yeah.
And tell me how you ended up becoming an activist. Was that something that you were raised on? Or?
So it's something that I do believe that, sometimes you know you're calling and you know something when it feels well. My mother raised 7 kids on a housekeeper's salary. So she worked at the old county hospital. And I would see her on election day take the day off from work and drive people to the polls and making sure that they were able to vote. So I saw that. And then there was a store in my community that refused to hire African-American people. It was owned by a white family. And my pastor at the time was Reverend Willis. I'm a member of New Hope Missionary Baptist Church. And they did a boycott, economic sanctions of that store, because they refused to hire people from the community. But yet they were in our community taking our dollars, but they didn't want to support us. So the church protest in front of that store. And as a little girl, I walked with my mother, and I didn't know what was going on, but she just say kept walking. But I saw the signs, and it just felt like we were doing something that was right. So I do believe it was always in my spirit to advocate and speak up. And
did it work? Did the protest work? Did
almost they definitely. Oh, they yeah. brought in, and they not only did they give African American people jobs, but they also created scholarships for the community.
Oh, wow.
So you got an early lesson there, speaking out.
Oh, definitely, yes.
And then you went to school at the University of South Florida, and I think you've told a story before about a counselor that you had to talk to you about whether or not you should go to college. Can you, do you remember that story that you've talked about?
So I went to school, I graduated from from Chamberlain High School, and so back then, nobody asked us, and when I say us, African-American students, did they want to go to college? They didn't say anything. They just assumed.
Your mom's a housekeeper, you're going to be a housekeeper.
There you go. That's it. So, and once I graduated, I just said I wanted to go to college. So I had no idea of what was going on. And I remember catching the city bus to University of South Florida, and I told them I wanted to go to school there. And then this lady, this counselor there, she was asking me, did you take this class? Did you have this test? And I was like, no, I didn't know what that was. So,
because nobody in high school had advised you in that way.
Nobody prepared me. Nobody told us anything. All I was told is, you know, you have enough credits so you graduate, and that was it. So they didn't give us any guidance whatsoever. And so and then I realized at USF, the lady told me that I couldn't go there. So I got back on the bus and I rode back home, and I literally cried the whole way because I felt like I failed my mother. I knew my mother wanted more for me. She wanted better for me than what she was doing, but I felt like I was a failure.
Was she wanting you to go to college?
So my mother didn't understand, but she didn't understand college, but she wanted more. She didn't want her children to be a housekeeper. So, and I was the baby of seven. So everybody else had productive and lucrative careers. So, but I was the first one to go off to college. So at that time, the city had a program at Hillsborough Community College, and I inquired about that program, and I went to that program, and that's how I was able to enroll myself at Hillsborough Community College.
And then you went to USF, and you ended up graduating from FAMU.
That is correct. I went back to USF, haha, in your face. But then the feeling was not right at USF, so for African American students at the time. So there was still so many challenges there. And I, again, advocacy, just fighting, and then trying to go to school and learn. So at this point, I realized this was not the school for me. And I looked up and did some research on Florida A&M University, and I put in a call, and they said, welcome.
Were you involved in, you said, no, first of all, you said at USF, fighting. Were you were an activist in college?
Yeah, for myself. for myself, because, you know, USF has some issues with professors out there dealing with African-American students. So, and that's something that the NAACP is currently working with them on now.
Oh, you think they still have a problem? And what do you mean? There aren't enough African-American professors, or do you think that they don't handle the students well?
All of the above.
And are you working with the university administration?
Yeah, I can honestly say that the interim president, Rhea Law, she has been really stellar at answering the calls and having the meetings and having the open and candid conversations and ready to make change.
Okay. So you ended up graduating from FAMU, and you worked in healthcare.
Yes.
And what were you doing?
I worked at St. Joseph Hospital and some other facilities as well. So I did. I was a physical therapist tech, so I did that for like 20 years, and then I decided at the last hospital that I was at, I saw a lot of things that wasn't right. I saw a lot of things that needed to change, but they didn't let my voice. They didn't want to hear my voice. So I decided that it's time for me to go.
And what are you saying? You said you saw a lot of things. What kinds of things did you see that when you said you got to go, that's when you left and decided to become an activist because of what you saw in the workplace?
That is correct. So when it comes to patient care, I would always tell the patient, if you didn't like what someone said or something someone did, if you, you know, question it, you have the right to question, and everybody has a boss. I always would say that everyone has a boss, whether it's the charge nurse, the director of nursing, everyone has a boss, and so you have the right to say what you need to say. And if you can't say it, have your family member come and stand up in the middle of the hallway and say it and scream it loud, because the one who screams the loudest gets the best care. So I felt myself saying that so many times to people, and I was like, this is, you know, people shouldn't, they're sick. They shouldn't have to go through this much trauma to get service.
But you, when you left that, you were not necessarily an advocate in the realm of healthcare. You left and went to the Democratic Black Caucus. That's how you got involved in activism. That was your first,
yes.
Other than when you were a little kid, but as an adult, yeah.
Yeah, so I'd weighed out some things, and I looked at where's my voice needed at? Where do I need to go? So, and I looked at my community, and I realized that, oh my God, my community was stagnant. It wasn't falling down. It was just the same from when I grew up. It was just the same. It has not moved. But then I would visit other communities and ride around, and I saw growth. I saw movement upward bound, and I saw movement of expansion, and I was like, wow.
You mean in Tampa?
In Tampa.
But not East Tampa.
Not East Tampa.
This was what time frame? The 90s?
Yeah, definitely in the 90s. And that's what made me say it's time for change, and they need my voice.
And so you went to the Democratic Black Caucus, or the Democratic Party, basically, Hillsborough County Democratic Party.
Yeah, it was the Democratic Black Caucus, yeah.
Which is a part of the Democratic Party. But did
yeah.
you, so, but you went from there to the NAACP. Mm-hmm. Now, why did you feel that the NAACP, and interesting you say the voice that speaks the loudest gets the most attention. You were talking about that in the hospital.
Yes.
But, you went from the Democratic Party to the NAACP. Why that switch? Why did you, and you ended up, you've been there for almost 20 years at the NAACP, and you were just with the Democratic Party a couple years.
Yeah. So I saw there was a need. I could expand myself more. And I remember working the polls, getting people out to vote, and there was a gentleman that saw me there, and he said, I need you over at what we're doing over at the NAACP, and you're going to come over there and you're going to work with us. And I was like, oh, I'm not going over there. So, and he just kept asking me. And then the president at the time was Carolyn Collins. She saw me and asked me and met with me and said, what, you know, can you come over and help and do something? So at that time, I contemplated and I thought about, will my voice be heard? And which was so important. And so at that time, I went over there.
And what issues were you tackling at that point? You recall then?
It was mainly voter registration and getting the people out to vote at that time. And it was, we worked a little bit on accountability when it came to elective officials. And so that was one of the things that we were working on.
So, listeners, if you'd like to join the conversation, please call us at 813-239-9663 or email us at dj@wmnf.org or text us at 813-433-0885. What do you think of the state of racial affairs in this city and the job that Yvette Lewis is doing heading the NAACP. Please call us.
And if you're just tuning in, our guest is Yvette Lewis, who is the president of the local chapter, the Hillsborough County chapter of the NAACP. Let's turn to some literally breaking news right now.
Breaking news on an issue that you have been very closely involved with.
Yeah, we're here in the studio, and on the TV we're seeing right now Mayor Jane Castor announcing a new chief of the Tampa Police Department, Mary O'Connor.
A former assistant police chief.
And Yvette, you've been involved in this. You were involved in the Citizens Review Board. So that, yes. And the Citizens Review Board is a board that was created to sort of watch the police department, review mm-hmm. cases in the police department, review complaints. And in the past, it was talk to us about it, because you sit on that board now, correct?
No, I don't.
Well, you
sit
don't.
On the board.
NAACP is represented.
Yeah,
but let's talk about that, because you know, and what is your relationship like with the mayor? What is your relationship like with the police department? How has that evolved, particularly over the last couple of years, with all the discussion about the Citizens Review Board in the wake of the George Floyd murder and the Black Lives Matter protests? That's a big question. A lot to talk about.
It's a lot. So, the results of... first of all, I want to say... we have been bridging the gap between the community and law enforcement for many years before George Floyd. So I want to say that. And but then after George Floyd's death, and it sparked another and a different conversation of accountability when it came to the police department and the African-American community. So the police chief at that time was Chief Dugan, Brian Dugan. And
he was very controversial. People were calling for mm-hmm. him to be ousted.
He was controversial, but I have to say, and I have to speak honestly, when there was an issue in our office regarding the police, he reacted and he took care of it. So one of our things in our office is that we're here to help resolve the issues of the community. So I had someone there that was helping resolving the issues of the community. So I can't tell a lie and say he didn't help, but he was a great help to the NAACP in resolving the issues and the concerns of the community.
What can you be more specific about what he helped resolve that turned you on to him and made you feel good about him? And did that relationship evolve, or were you always a fan?
So, no, I was not all a fan. I was not always a fan. Mm-hmm. So it took a lot. You know, and honestly, coming from an African-American community, it takes a lot to understand and trust the police department. Because of so many things that we have seen and dealt with, a lot of it was not positive. But I knew I had to make that step for my community in order for my community to understand. Some of those things were police pulling people over just because, and they ended up, you know, taking a sobriety test, but the person was never drunk. So, you know, those are issues that we had to fight and iron out. Being disrespectful when they called out, blaming the victim, in short with the people. So those are some of the things that we were able to resolve. I mean, there were many more, because our office gets a lot of calls. On average a day, we average around about 20 calls a day.
From people who are complaining about just issues in general, or just about the police department?
Just issues in general.
Yeah.
But it varies on what different season it is. So today it may be the Tampa Police Department. Tomorrow it may be a little heightened, where it's a little different, where it's, we get calls on USF Police Department,
mm-hmm.
The city, housing, everything. Hospitals, everything. We get a whole array of phone calls into the office. And so, you know, people, we are the largest branch in the state of Florida. We have over 2,000 members. And if you Google NAACP, you always get the Hillsborough County branch.
You have a lot more members than you did when you started as president, right?
That is correct. When I started, we had about 130 members. And within that time, we have grown to over 2,000.
More than 2,000. That's great.
Which is an organization that has been around since, I think it was 1917?
1917. That is correct.
And back then, the African-American community was literally under assault.
It was.
Because it was only a few years after the Confederate monument was erected in front of the courthouse and dedicated to the proposition of white supremacy.
Yes.
And black people were being lynched. I read a story about one fellow who made the mistake of flirting with a white woman, and he was castrated. Mm-hmm. And the NAACP tried to do something about it.
Yeah, there were many stories about lynching that went on here in Tampa. Tampa is no different from the other cities of the South. So it's sad, but our history doesn't tell a good part of what happened to us under the hands of white people.
Going back to that with the police, so we've got a new police chief. It's going to be, it looks like it's a woman. So, and the interim was also, was a woman. Was the interim?
No, Delgado was a...
And you like Delgado, is that correct, Yvette?
So... I like the fact that Delgado was definitely open and having the conversations and willing to make change and to continue the work to make change. So from my understanding, and I'm looking at the news feed as you're looking at it, that she did pick a lady, Mary O'Connell.
Yeah.
And
what's interesting about her is she's, of the three candidates, she's the only one with an arrest on her record and a conviction. Maybe it says something about the possibility of redemption. I don't know.
Well, you know, if it's funny because if people want, it's people want redemption when it comes to them and their race, but when it comes to us, they say continue the punishment. They continue to hold it over that one flaw, that one mistake, over an African-American head. You know, hence we have the Florida Restoration of Rights Coalition, you know, where they, you know, in the state of Florida where you want to strip someone just because they have a felony, they are not able to vote, they're not able to be productive citizens or that. So when it comes to us, that's what they want. But I'm curious, I've never worked with this lady before, how she's going to handle that.
So you have a new, let's continue with this conversation. So we have a new police chief, and we've got the Citizens Review Board that some changes have been made to, with the NAACP participating in that, pressing for changes to the Citizens Review Board. And what that board does is it sort of monitors the police department and reviews complaints and makes sure that they are, following best practices and treating people fairly. Mm-hmm. So the NAACP is now going to be part of that Citizens Review Board. What's your take on that whole organization? You know, last week we had on Bemetra Simmons, who was a member of the Citizens Review Board, and she said that the public doesn't come. They hardly get any, nobody goes to the meetings unless there's, the only time they really had a lot of people coming to the meetings was after George Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your take on that? What does that board need to do? Is it strong enough? Does it need more? Or do you think with the NAACP participating, maybe it will be stronger?
I think it will, but I don't think it has enough teeth to make a strong impact. It needs to be something with subpoena power, and that's something that we were pushing, and we still will continue to push that. It needs to be publicized and let people know when the meetings are. The meeting should not be kept in a secret or a dark, or they have to go deep within a website to find that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you have to understand, the reason why the people were in an outrage or were so vocal back then. The reason why we were so vocal was because of Biking While Black in the city of Tampa. And then you have this lady that's going to be our new chief of police, from my understanding, who helped participated in that. And so I have a great deal of concern.
Interesting. We've got a phone call. We have Robin from Sarasota, who he grew up in California, and he wants to talk about, I guess, the state of race relations. Robin and Sarasota, you're on the line.
Thank you very much. Great show. Great show. Great project and great message. I grew up, I just went to my 50th high school reunion in Berkeley, California. I grew up in Berkeley in the 1960s and 70s, and there was a certain amount of racial tension before us, and we dropped it. We all dropped it. I had friends who were communists. I had friends who were Black Panthers. I had friends who were, you know, CIA military kids like that, and we just decided, you know, screw that. This is not right. It's just not American. You know, just let's drop it. Let's play softball. Come on. Everybody likes softball.
So you're saying that you feel like we used to get along better than we do now?
No, well, it was an enclave. I mean, it was Berkeley, California in the 60s and 70s. And so it was a pocket. It was this little, you know, area, and the message that didn't, I mean, it slowly creeped across the country. But I live in Sarasota, Florida now, and Florida was the last Confederate state to rejoin the Union. I mean, people say, oh, well, Florida's this great, you know, progressive southern state. It's like, it's not.
Well, Yvette has a quizzical look on her face. Yeah, and in fact, I think that per capita, Florida had more lynchings than any other state in the country. So,
yeah,
right.
Entirely possible. Entirely possible.
Yeah, we think of ourselves as not being deep south, but...
Yeah, no, can you say like, Rosewood? Oh, it's gone.
Right. Exactly.
That's right. All these people from New York, all these people from New Jersey, it's like, oh, no, this is like, you know, New Jersey South. It's like, no, it's not.
Right.
So I really appreciate, you know, hearing this show. You know, and I, you would know, I forgot the name.
Yvette Lewis is our guest.
Oh, right.
Yvette Lewis, no, who's the president of the NAACP.
Right, but the propaganda minister for the Black Panther Party woman?
I don't know.
Angela Davis?
Yes, Angela Davis. So I spent some time with Angela Davis and Maya Angelou, you know, and...
You're hanging out with a pretty good crowd there. People. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, you know, it's just like I grew up in a great place at a great time.
Well, thanks for calling in, Robin. We appreciate it. If you're just tuning in, this is WMNF Tampa, Wavemakers. We're with Yvette Lewis, the president of the NAACP Hillsborough County Chapter. If you have any questions for her, give us a call, 813-239-9663, or you can send us an email to dj@wmnf.com.
So we have an email from a listener who asked for a little more details about the comment I had about the new police chief and her arrest. And this is based on a story from the Tampa Bay Times. She was in an incident with her then boyfriend, later husband. He was being tested for a DUI. She got into a scuffle with police, ended up being charged with assault on a law enforcement officer. She pleaded no contest to misdemeanor charges of battery and obstruction, and a judge withheld adjudication.
And that was a long time ago.
That was in 1995, not long after she became a police officer.
Mm-hmm.
So, that I'm only adding that at the request of one of our listeners.
We have the irascible John Dunn, our phone answerer, who has this question for you, Yvette. Mm-hmm. He wants to know, what topics will you cover in your first conversation with the new chief? And he says, freedom of speech is not a license to be stupid.
That's a good motto in this day and age.
So, first of all, I want to understand her take, her thought process on the biking while black. The question is, why do you keep going back to it? Because, you know, history repeats itself.
And let's remind people what that is.
So. The Biking While Black is when Tampa Police Department were issuing out tickets or even arresting African-American people for just literally for riding a bike, for the simplest things. There was somebody who wasn't even riding a bike. She was walking the bike, and they stopped and frisked her. So it's another name also for stop and frisk and giving them legal ramifications that, you look suspicious or something like that. So I want to know, that's my question to her. What were your thought process? What are your thoughts today on this? And how can you heal the community? Because to be honest with you, if we keep talking about it, then there was no healing. There was no understanding that this has went away. You can't just think we're going to stop talking about it or you don't hear about it and it's gone. Okay, let's call it out. Slavery still happened. Okay, whether we stop talking about it, whether we take it out of the books or whether we remove monuments, slavery still happened. Injustice still happened to African-American people. But what are we going to do? When I say we, what are we going to do, the city of Tampa, to heal these wounds of African-American people? So bringing her in, that's my first question. I need to know her answer, and I want to feel her answer.
Another issue that you worked on related to the police department was moving the police headquarters to East Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where are we on that project, and how are you feeling about it?
Well, that project is that, you know, the community has said, why are they moving this here? So there's quite a few people in East Tampa do not want that station there. We already have a police station there. So now my fear is you're moving a police headquarters there, you're going to be over-policing the community.
Have they scaled that back, though? The police headquarters will stay downtown and some of the police department?
No, they haven't.
No.
And, you know, you didn't really get community input, so nothing was really done. So, again, when it comes to the African-American community, we don't have a voice. No one's listening. Or if they're listening, they're just not hearing us because they continue to doing what they want to do.
Well, you have the project itself and parts of it mm-hmm. are not bad in terms of bringing economic development to East Tampa because offices. But just what you're saying about the police department, bringing a police headquarters to East Tampa is a whole different ballgame because that does lead to over-policing. We know when there are mm-hmm. the more police that are there, the more arrests there are going to be, whatever neighborhood you're going to be in, because you're going to start seeing more. So it seems like an odd place to move the department, the police department.
Yeah, so but when you say bringing economic development to East Tampa, what do you actually mean by economic development? Because if you're just meaning building a building for a day and then it goes away, that's just like teaching a man how to fish. I mean, just feeding them a fish instead of teaching them how to fish. So, you know, so that building will be erected within a year or two, but that economic growth goes because all of those departments, all of those jobs that they say they're bringing, the jobs are already filled by the city.
We've gotten a text message from one of our listeners that I wanted to mention, Janet, taking issue with something you said about lynchings in Florida, which is that Florida had the most lynchings per capita mm-hmm. of any other state in the country, and this listener points out that Mississippi had 581 lynchings, Florida had 282, not a record that either state should be proud of, but the fact is that Florida had a very small population at the time these lynchings were occurring. So the key fact here is per capita.
Mm-hmm.
Yvette, you have had a lot of thorny conversations issues with Mayor Jane Castor. We had the renting while black that we talked about, the biking while black, the issue with the Police Citizens Review Board not having that much power, the police headquarters in East Tampa. And Mayor Castor, in fact, won every precinct in the city except for five largely black precincts in East Tampa. Mm-hmm. How do you think the mayor is doing 3 years into her first term in terms of dealing with the black community?
I do believe that there's still a lot of work to be done. And dealing with the African-American community and also dealing with all of the community. You can't just continue to surround yourself with just certain segments or certain people of the community that is going to rubber stamp or just agree with you just because. You have to surround yourself and be ready for the open and candid conversations. And so that's my whole thing. But, you know, Janet, I have to say this. We're a civil rights organization. We're the only organization that really fight to put our own self out of business. So having these conversations, we know are not going to be popular. We're not here to be popular. We're here to fight and advocate for the community and for the people. So we know that there's not going to be a lot of people that agree with us because we're challenging them. We're holding them accountable. And, you know, and we're making them understand that there is a need of the community and they don't want that. So being popular with the community, I mean, with the elective officials, it is, we know we're not going to be their favorite one. A lot of times we're not going to be invited to that dinner party, but we definitely are going to be outside with the signs and making sure that the community gets what they need.
So you've been around a long time and worked with a lot of mayors. Is there anybody that you think did a particularly great job in working with the African-American community and working with the NAACP?
We have a lot of work to do in the city of Tampa. Because if I answer that question, first of all, I don't need to answer it. You can just look at the city and see how divided this city is when it comes to the needs of African-American people and when it comes to people not having the resources or not having the stuff that they need to live with, the basic needs or the opportunity in the city. So you can see that. And then that question can be answered by the simplest person. If they were doing what they were supposed to do, again, we wouldn't even be here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have a call from Nancy in St. Pete. And if you want to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 813-239-9663. We're with Yvette Lewis from the Hillsborough County NAACP. Nancy in St. Pete, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, yeah. I'm kind of tired of hearing about the statues and all the stuff like that. Because let's talk about the real stuff, which are the race-based laws that we have in the city of Tampa and all over the United States that are based on keeping people down. The black community in particular has always been our scapegoat of choice. And I think it's time that we looked at the laws and tried to do something with that. And I hope the NAACP will look into those laws and report to us which ones are the ones that are really meant to keep people down, and I'm sure they know a bunch of them. So I just give her all my support. And Ms. Lewis, you just go for it, girl. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Nancy. What about that, Yvette? Are there particular laws that you're targeting that we're saying have implicit bias in that is what we're talking about with laws that end up targeting African Americans disproportionately.
There's a whole boatload definitely coming out of legislation this year. Even when it comes to Tampa, everybody having an opportunity, a piece to get economic growth, when it comes to minority businesses, when it comes to home ownership, even when it comes to simple things as a police stop and why, NAACP meeting, we had a conversation about victims dealing with the homicide detectives. So we were getting several calls on how they were being treated. And these families have loved ones that have passed away. But the homicide detectives from the Sheriff Department and from the Tampa Police Department were treating them as though they were victims. So we had to realize that this was an issue, this was a concern. So we brought it to the community and we were able to make some changes. So we have a lot of work to do, but I just want to remind people that the civil rights movement, the NAACP, was not built with just one organization. There were civil rights movements has six organizations. The NAACP was founded with 17 people, and a lot of them didn't wear the same skin tone. They were different people. Mm-hmm. So I am asking everyone to get involved and encourage, and thank you for that last call. It gives us hope that we're not standing by ourselves and that we want to continue on to fight, but that we have some people standing in the background with us that is putting pressure on the administrative, on the elective officials, that change needs to come, not got to come, not waiting on to come, but it needs to come right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you are involved in the political process, I guess, every day. And so often you have a seat at the table when mm-hmm. it comes to discussing some important issues with government leaders, but you don't pull any punches. You're very plain spoken and can be very blunt. Here's what you had to say at a Tiger Bay Club meeting last year about the Community Task Force on Policing that the mayor created in the wake of the murder of George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter protests.
The mayor appointed you to the police task force. Has this been successful? And what more needs to be done?
No, it has not been successful. It's a facade, it's a joke. They talked about a lot of stuff, but the stuff that they're talking about is already slowly, they were kind of doing it and then they weren't doing it. So we need to see an aggressive change. We need to see an active change, something powerful that's going to help serve the community and bridge the gap between the African-American community and the police department. I didn't see any of that.
I've been around a long time, Yvette. 42 years in Tampa. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever encountered an NAACP president as plain-spoken and blunt as you are. Is that just reflecting your personality, or is this a new approach by the NAACP?
Well, I have to go back to my mother. My mother said, your name is all you got, so be careful. Don't mess up your name. And then she also told me, when you tell one lie, you got to tell another one. So I'm always been an honest person. I tell them, don't take it personal, but I'm here to advocate for those who don't have a voice or for those who say, please speak up and say something for me. So
are you still getting invited to meetings at City Hall?
No. So no, because, some people take it personal, and it's not really personal. My thing is, if you do what you're supposed to do, then you shouldn't have no fear, or you shouldn't be feeling that way. You know, like they say, a hit dog will holler if you say something, but if you're doing what you're supposed to do, then we can talk.
So I wanted to bring up a subject that has been near and dear to the NAACP for more than half a century, which is our school system.
Mm-hmm.
It was the NAACP that led to the desegregation of our schools.
Yes.
What are your major concerns about the schools right now? And are you focused on the attempts by the Republican-led legislature to stifle the history that is taught in our classrooms?
So we are fighting that. First of all, we're looking at that legislation. We're watching it. So when I say we as the NAACP, along with the state Florida Conference and AACP, along with the national, is definitely looking at that. So the fight with our school district here locally, you know, it's funny because we have Republicans that are suppressing us and holding us back, but we have a Democratic led majority for the school district here, but they are holding us back just as well too. So one of the things is we're getting calls that there is a disproportionate number of African Americans students that are placed in these alternative schools. So the question is, why do we have so many African-American students that are placed in the schools? But you tell me that your arrest records have gone down. And now we've worked extensively with the with Addison Davis last year on fixing the arrests and coding and the numbers. And so it has gone. The conversation went very deep until we made a lot of changes, but it seems like you're not arresting them, but you're putting them out of school in these alternative schools. So it's always something constant going. And we have received several calls about that. So that's going to come up in our conversation. But again, we have a Democratic led diocese that is talking, I don't know, a whole bunch of, you know, only certain ones aren't really advocating like they should. So I guess, you know, one of the things is accountability when we are going to the polls.
We've got an email from somebody who wants to know, and this will be good for you to say, how does one become a member of the NAACP?
So I tell people we are the cheapest organization there is to join. It's only $30 a member. And so what you can do is you can go to our website, and it's naacphillsborough.org, and you can click on our membership button and join to be a member. Even if you want, so you click on to be a member and be a part. We put up our notices about our meetings up there. We're still meeting by Zoom now, when our meeting's every third Thursday. And so you're welcome to be a part of it. We have several different committees that you, if you want to join or be a part or want to lead, come on. We welcome more volunteers. We are a complete volunteer organization. I don't get paid for this. And so this is something that people want to be a part of. Let's go.
That's a really important point, I have to say. I think a lot of people assume this is your full-time job. You have a day job, right?
Yes, I do have a day job. So, and I have a wonderful boss as well.
Can we ask you, what is your day job? People might want to know. If you don't want to say it, that's fine. But the reason I ask is because this takes a lot of your time.
It does. It takes a lot of my time.
So you could use some help, right? We have an email from someone asking, how can people not just join the NAACP, but are there volunteer opportunities?
There are a lot of volunteer opportunities. Please come. We just moved in a new facility, so we have plenty of room, plenty of space where everybody can space themselves out. And we welcome you to come. Give me a call or send me an email. You can go to our website, and it's president@naacphillsborough.org, and send me an email as opposed to sending if you're calling, it's going to take some time because our phone lines stay full. And so we'll welcome you.
Another issue that the NAACP in Tampa has been very involved in, and I'm talking about going back 40 years when Carl Warren Sr. went to court and ended up forcing single-member districts,
yes,
city council and county commission and legislature, and the NAACP ended up kind of taking over that lawsuit. Mm-hmm. Are there changes in the county commission districts that you would like to see? Because we now have, because of changes in redevelopment and gentrification, a very different picture of the single-member districts in Hillsborough County. Is that something that the NAACP is looking at?
So we did look at that, and we fought hard on that thing as well when it came to redistricting with the county. So I'm just a little disappointed with county commission because I felt like they singled out certain people, and then when the African-American community went to speak, they did not listen. You know, they took Tempa Terrace out of our district, or didn't put it in there because they said, oh, because Tempa Terrace didn't want to be there. And so they were listening to the people with Tempa Terrace. So my question was to all of the county commissioners, what makes Tempa Terrace voice stronger than the African-American voice? So when are we going to have a voice to say, this is what we want? And, but nobody could really answer that question. So, let's just say it. Maybe it's time for change on county commission, that we need people that's going to listen to us and not dictate what is best for us because we know what we want to eat.
You so you've been with the NAACP, as we said, for nearly 20 years. Mm-hmm. What would you say are your biggest accomplishments? What are you most proud of that you've done in that time?
Building relationships, building it back, giving it the strength and the voice that it deserves and that it needs in this community. When I took over, I tell people that this organization was dead and I had to revive it.
Well, we are going from 130 members to 2,000.
Yes.
That's revived.
Yes. So we have an empowerment center. We're the only branch in the state of Florida that has an empowerment center that grows and cultivates minority businesses. And so we have successfully grown and cultivated many minority businesses that people have gotten lucrative contracts through the city, the county, or other private entities that come up for bid. So that's one. And then the other one is we just moved into a new facility. So we moved from a one room to now we have five rooms that we can spread out and do the actual work for the community and be more efficient for the community. So so we have that partnership as well. And like I say, building partnerships and strengthening our voice. We just had a huge voter registration training last night. We had about 25 people there of many different organizations that were recognized. So we hold political forums that have over 800 people, 900 people there. The largest political forums in Hillsborough County. Our Freedom Fund dinners are well over 1,000 attendees. So we scaled it back last year. But those are some of the accomplishments that we have done in dealing with law enforcement, too, as well. The respect. Law enforcement never used to meet with us. We've never had a relationship with the sheriff department. Now we can pick up the phone and get issues resolved.
Great.
You have a good relationship with the sheriff's office?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Well, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being here with us, Yvette. We appreciate it very much. Thanks to our listeners. Thanks to the callers. Thanks to everyone who sent an email. Next week, we will be in the middle of a fun drive. So if you want to get, if you like what you're hearing on community radio here, if you love community radio, you love WMNF, you can go to WMNF.org and make a donation and pick the Wavemaker show. Or if there's another show you like, feel free to donate to that show. But we're in the middle of a big fund drive. I love WMNF is the fund drive, and it's not too early to start giving.
We will be raising money not just for our show, but for the whole station, because we would not be on the air if it wasn't for these other great programs. And so take an opportunity to pledge to support this station during our show next week.
Or even now.
Hit that tip jar online. Go to WMNF.org.
Stay tuned. Up next is NPR News, followed by some fantastic music until 3 o'clock with Harrison Nash. This is WMNF Tampa.